This week's cedro vallejo is a large cedro with a lot of very interesting subject matter. It begins with chapter 18, and it goes all the way through chapter 23, 22, which is the 23, actually, which is the story of the Arcado, through the Arcado. Now, it begins with the, if you note in chapter 18, verse 1, where it says, Vayero Elov Hashem Beilene Manre, that God appeared to Avram in the plain of Mamre. And Mamre was the name of the owner, or one of the owners of that area. They were living in peace with Avram. Mamre, Oner, and Eshkol, Bale Bris Avram. They were people who made a covenant of peace with Avram. And it describes the scenario where this takes place, that he was sitting in the midst of a very hot day, and he lifted up his eyes, and he saw three people who were coming towards him, and he ran out and to greet them, and he bowed down in front of them, and he addressed them, and he said that, please, in sentence three, don't pass by without partaking of my hospitality. Sentence four, he says, let there be brought a little bit of water that you rest and wash yourself and rest under the tree. And then I will take, he says, a morsel of bread, and you will satisfy your hunger, because since you have passed by my area, I wish you do me this favor. So he was very conscientious, we see, in fulfilling this mitzvah. So it says that he first ran to Sora and he told her to bake up a storm, literally. And in sentence seven, not a little piece of bread, and in sentence seven, he ran out to the fields. He took a small calf, and actually they say that he took three, the Chazal learn out, so that each one would have the same portion of meat. Each one ended up having a tongue, which was a delicacy, and he gave it to the Nahar, to the youth who prepared it, and then he took milk. He made a whole banquet in sentence eight. And then after sentence eight, they begin with their inquiries concerning his Sarah, where she is. But let's first discuss a little bit the first part, the first eight sentences. The language that the Torah uses when it begins, it uses the word Vayera Elov Hashem. God revealed himself to Avram. Now, Elov relates to the previous chapter. The previous chapter, Abraham had just finished the act of circumcision. And really, God, like Hirsch points out, that this is really the first time which we see Avram standing before God as an actual prophet, that God is going to tell him something in a prophetic knowledge, that he should have the prophecy and understand what is going to happen in the future. God did speak to Avram previously, telling him, Lech lecha me'artecha, like we learned in last week's Sedra. But the idea of Vayera, of revealing himself, not just hearing, there are different degrees of prophecy, revelation, communication. Previously, there was the communication with God. But the idea of hearing a voice, but the idea of having a form of revelation, this only occurred here. And the reason was because Avram had only reached, Hirsch says, this level as a result of the Milah. Before, he was not circumcised. Therefore, he couldn't have this degree of the prophecy or revelation of God. We find the same idea that Bilam, Harosha, Bilam, who was the prophet in the sense of evil, it says there that when God revealed himself, he would be nofel ugluyenayim. That means he would have to like fall into a trance, and he wouldn't be actually living in the sense of his normal life when God revealed himself. He would be in some kind of a trance stage, and he would fall on the ground. He wouldn't have the power to stand, almost some kind of a fit, a frenzy, because the idea was that Bilam was uncircumcised. He was an oral, and he, of course, lacked the purity of Avram. Therefore, he wouldn't be able to stand and have a revelation in the sense that Avram had now. But Hirsch points out this revelation was first now, after the commandment and the performance of the circumcision. That's why it uses the word Elov Hashem. Elov is a pronoun, continuance of the previous episode. The one who performed the act of circumcision on himself, that's the one to God revealed to him. Hirsch also points out a second point. He says that the God's presence, he said, is really everywhere, but it's not apparent to everybody. But only after, sometimes when a person fulfills an act of devotion that Avram had just fulfilled to God, so then, he says, does it become really apparent. That means what Hirsch is saying is that God is always there. But Avram reached such a high level that he was able to see in a clearer picture, he was able to see God. And it could be then when a person reaches such a high level and he's able to see God, he's able to hear the communication. There's a famous chazal that the rabbis tell us that every day there's like a baskol, there's like a heavenly voice that emanates, that comes from Sinai, from Har Chorev, and it like calls out, woe unto the people for the shame that the Torah finds itself in now. Now, we don't hear this voice. The idea is it's not because the voice doesn't come out. The voice is there. It's just that we're deafened to this voice. We're not in the level to be able to pick up these signals. When I pick up my telephone, sometimes I hear WTOP. But when I walk around like this, I don't hear WTOP. So we have to really attune our antenna. If we attune our antenna, then we're able to pick up many signals. There are a lot of things floating around, all kind of messages, intercontinental, but we don't pick it up even, and interplanetary already. And a person who has very keen and spiritual antennae is able to really hear and communicate. So this is the idea, really, of Vayera Elov Hashem. Now, the act that is chosen here to show, to depict the life of Avram. When you speak about the life of Avram, you'll want to pick out two major acts, really, from all the episodes in the Torah that the Torah goes in great detail to emphasize, aside from the milah, but I mean, not aside from the circumcision, but the greatness of Avram's chesed, which is the first act of this chapter, the chesed, as we'll see, the fact that he acted with such benevolence, compassion for other people, which was far beyond our ability even to comprehend. And it ends with a similar act, which is really Gvura, which is also a tremendous force that Avram found within him, the strength to be able to take his son Yitzchak and bring him to Edom. Both of these acts, we'll see later, are really extolled, and that's why the Torah holds these out as showing us the great depth of the character of Avram Avinu. Now Hirsch points out, why does God reveal himself in this phase? And he says there is a purpose. Purpose because Avram was the epitome of chesed, shown by the way he was sitting here weakened by an operation, and he saw three plain people, and he went ahead and he treated them with such great generosity. Now, Lot also saw them. We'll discuss him also later. But Lot saw them, it says, kemalachim, like angels. Some say that Avram also knew they were angels, but that's a different school of thought. But even knowing that they're angels, Avram felt compelled to go through all of this acts of chesed. If you look at it, that Avram knew they were angels, why was it necessary? They don't really eat, or they don't really appreciate the tongue. To them, it doesn't matter if it's the tongue or if it's ground meat. It doesn't matter to an angel. Yet the chesed Avram was so totally imbued with chesed that the performance of the act itself was something that gave him, he felt spiritually compelled to fulfill. But the common way that we look at it is that Avram did not know they were angels, that they came and he perceived them as people. And if he perceived them as people, we see to what degree he accepted them. Lot, of course you'll accept him. If you know the President of the United States is coming to your house, you'll do your house from top to bottom, and you know, you'll really make all kind of preparations. But if it's a common beggar coming to your house, it really wouldn't be that way. In fact, they say the famous an episode that occurred with the Reb Yoshe Ber, the Beis HaLevi, the original Brisker Rav. So he once was traveling on a trip. He was traveling, and when he used to travel outside of the city of Risk, it seems this used to be the custom. He was the first of the Soloveitchik, we'll call the Soloveitchik dynasty. So the custom used to be that they were very, very modest, and they took off their rabbinic clothes or garbs when they were traveling, and people therefore would not recognize him. So the story goes that he was once traveling, and he had to stop at night, and he had to go into an inn. And the innkeeper, of course, did not recognize him, and he refused to leave him in. So he says, finally, but he was outside, and the weather was terrible. He said, finally, you could go ahead, and I'm getting great guests later. I'm getting outstanding people, and I can't have you in the rooms. But if you want to lay down there in a corner on the floor, you could lay down there in a corner on the floor. And he kept on, like, looking down at him. And then all of a sudden, his great guests arrived. The great guests were famous Hasidic Rebbe with his entourage. When he walked into this anteroom, he happened to look down, and he saw, and he took a second look, and he saw it was the Brisker Rav laying there. So he said, what's happening? He couldn't imagine what he's doing there. So of course, when the owner found out who it was, he went ahead, and he was so apologetic, and how could he ever be forgiven, and so on. So he told him, I want you to come to me to Brisk later, and then I'll discuss this with you to forgive you. So when he came there, it was in the Sedra Vayera. So he says, from this Sedra, you see the difference between Avram and Lot. The greatness of Avram was, Kidmusavim, they looked like Arabs, like people who were nomads, Bedouins, just traveling. And he took them, and he treated them with the greatest covet, greatest. But Malachim, he says, it's not a big thing that when you come, of course, there was Mesiris Nefesh. You can't undermine that. We'll talk later that Lot endangered himself. But the aspect of treating them with such dignity and such royalty, of course, because if you had an angel coming to your house, it would be the same. They bring down a story in Eretz Yisrael. In the story, they bring down, there was a great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, who was the father-in-law of Rabbi Cutler and the father-in-law of other, and great Rosh Yeshiva. So he lived in Yerushalayim. So somebody once saw one of the members of the family came running in, that the Chazen Ish is coming to see you. So he heard of the Chazen Ish. You all heard of the Chazen Ish. The Chazen Ish is coming to see him. So he got up, and they straightened the quick thing, and started cooking, and he ran outside to greet him. Came outside, so he happened to see there was a Jew who, he looked just like the Chazen Ish, but it wasn't the Chazen Ish. The Jew came in, this Jew, and this is Alman, for a moment was a dad. Then he took him in, come, please sit down, here's some cake, they're cooking up this, here's some tea. And he went through like the Chazen Ish was there. So the family couldn't understand. And finally, this person was overwhelmed. The great Ravisa Zalman, actually, all he came was to ask him for a letter. He was going to collect money for his daughter to make a wedding. So he wanted a letter from Ravisa Zalman Meltzer. So that's what he came. But he got the royal treatment. So the family said, why did you do this? How does this look right? You're a shivi, you go and you serve him tea, and you serve him this. I mean, so he says, what is the difference? He says, we learn from Avraham Avinu. Just if they're malachim, even if they're not malachim, it's not the Chazen Ish. If it's a strange person, so you have to go out of your way to show the same degree of chesed. So this degree of chesed was shown. So Hirsch points out that the idea of the revelation here shortly thereafter is to tell Avram what's going to happen to Sodom. And this was the prophecy. He's prophesizing to Avram what's going to happen to Sodom. So Hirsch says there was really no reason to teach Avram this lesson, because Avram couldn't do otherwise. We see his great chesed. So to emphasize what the destruction of Sodom will be because of their lack of chesed, there was no need to tell Avram. But Hirsch says, he points out that I know Avram, that the purpose that I'm telling him is that to show Leman Asher Yitzave as Bona of Acharot. He says that man doesn't have to be warned by the terrible fate of Sodom and Gomorrah. But in the future, none of his descendants who will live in that same luxurious land should grow luxuriantly to the same frame of mind, but that they should always remember that in the future, that luxury and plenty do not bury and destroy the benevolence of the spirit of Avram. And in fact, the Ramban speaks out about here, was Sodom unique? He says Sodom especially was considered a target for divine reprisal, because Sodom was in Eretz Yisrael. And the fact that it was in God's backyard, as saying, and they conducted themselves in such a way, so therefore their punishment would be that much greater. So in a sense, what Hirsch is saying, that in the future, they're going to find themselves in this land, and therefore they will perhaps act the same way. So Avram will emphasize, look at what happened to Sodom, in fact, that we should have the chapter of Sodom to read through every year in the Torah, in order that we should learn the lesson that brought about the downfall of Sodom. Now, there is also another purpose why Hashem told Avram at this point. And just briefly, Hashem told this to Avram. If we go back to Noah, the Seder of Noah, God said after the flood, Noah brought a sacrifice. He said when God smelled the fragrance of the sacrifice, he then made a bris, a covenant with Noah. And the sign of the covenant is the famous rainbow, which is the sign of the covenant. Now, what was this covenant? He says, I will not destroy man in the future, but there is another choice. That means there will be, within mankind, there will always be a tzaddik who will be able to bring out an influence upon others. And in that way, generations will change. And Hirsch points out in Noah that before the flood, it was very difficult to change mankind. Why? Because they lived 800-900 years. I mean, everybody was healthy and they lived almost forever. So how are you going to go ahead and change? But afterwards, when the climate changed and so on, and that way the health of the people changed and the longevity was quite dramatically dropped, so therefore, if one generation is bad, there's always the hope that the other generation will be able to be good. The land also became different continents. At that time, there was communication. From one side of the land to the other, they were able to go. But after the change in the land, there are already oceans. Now we've overcome that problem. We have the communication very quickly, and it hasn't been for the better, obviously, in a spiritual sense. But he said, knowing that man changed and the world changed, therefore there is hope that if there will be a person in the future, that person will have an influence and change society. So therefore there is no longer the need to bring about the destruction of mankind. Now Hirsch says that this message was given to Avraham. This covenant, to carry on this covenant, to be the successor, the fulfiller of this covenant, was given to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, he says the name Avraham also comes from the word Aver, wings, because he like carries the whole world on his wings. That's really the purpose. And this was the covenant that Avraham gave over to his son Yitzchak. He wanted to give it over to Yishmael, like we learned in last week's Sedra. He said to God, let Yishmael be that. So he said, no, Yishmael is not worthy of that. It has to be the son that Sarah had. But this son carried over this priest, this covenant. Now, ki yodati, it says that I know, if we'll take a look in this sentence a little bit further, it says in sentence 19, if you take a look at 18:19, God had just said that I'm going to reveal to Avram this prophetic revelation that I am bringing at this point. And the revelation will be, why am I going to tell him? You see that in sentence 17, verse 17. It says, but God said, shall I keep undisclosed from Avram that which I intend to do? And Avram will be a great nation. And all the nations of the earth are to be blessed from him. And therefore, ki yadativ, I have given him care in order that he should tell his children afterwards to do tzedakah and mishpat. to order that God will bring in Avram that which he spoke to him. So these verses 18 and 19 are actually the verses which describe the mission that Avram has, that all the nations will be blessed by him. In a sense, he will be the spiritual force that will be given over concern for nations, and this will be taught unto his children who will be successors. Therefore, if we're taking it within what we've been speaking, if I'm about to destroy Sodom, Avram is the one who carries the spiritual responsibility, we'll say, for Sodom. So therefore, God says in verse 20, God said in verse 17, will I cover up from Avram that which I intend to do? Avram is the one who I'm supposed to, who will carry this responsibility. Now, how does Avram carry that responsibility? If you notice, he starts talking to Hashem. There are 50 tzaddikim, there are 40 tzaddikim, there are 30 tzaddikim. So what does he say to God? In sentence 23, it says, Vayigash Avram, after God told him what I'm going to do with these angels, the angels went ahead, two of them left, and they went, the one that came to heal Avram, you know, we say the angels have certain missions. One came to heal Avram, and one came to save Lot, and one went to destroy Sodom. The question is, each angel has a certain mission. Just before we get into this point, each angel has a certain mission. The same angel that went to heal Avram, he went to save Lot. Now, is there a shortage of angels? The gas costs too much. I mean, why did they have to have two different angels? So there's like a story just on this point that's told over from Reb Shlomo Kluger, who was one of the great Gaonim. And the Chafetz Chaim used to say, Chafetz Chaim says, there's scarcity of angels in heaven, that Hashem had to put a double workload on one angel. So he said that really, on his own merits, as we see later in the story, Lot was not worthy of being saved. That means that Hashem should dispatch an angel down into earth, or create an angel, especially for the purpose of saving Lot. He was unworthy of that. But once the angel, he says, Rav Chaim says, was sent to heal Avram, so since he's down there already, so he can make a slight detour, we'll say, and go and save Lot, especially since Lot was saved in the schus of Avram. And they bring down a story, and this I heard from my father-in-law. The story is told from Rav Shlomo Kluger, and Rav Chaim brings this down. He was invited once to serve as a sandik. Rav Shlomo Kluger was the Rav of the city of Brod, which was a very strong, powerful Jewish community. And he was invited to serve as a sandik. When he came to the house, he saw that the bris was being put off. People were just waiting. So he answered, why are you waiting? Everybody is here. So they told him that the father of the newborn child was lying on his deathbed. And it was just moments until he will pass on. So they want to wait so that they'll be able to name the son after the father. When Rav Shlomo Kluger heard this, he immediately told them to perform the milah without any delay. So they asked him why. I mean, it's a logical reason. So he said the following. He says, I don't have the power to have an angel who is in charge of healing to make a special trip to heal the father. Obviously not, he says. But once the child is circumcised, an angel will be sent to heal the circumcised child. We believe that a malach comes. So once he is here, I will be able to be mispalo, Shlomo Kluger said, and to instruct him to visit the sick father and to heal him. That means that koach of tefillah, that much he would have. And the story goes on that happened, that indeed, a few days later, the father was already walking around as a healed person. So Chafetz Chaim said that was the idea, that Lot himself, Take, would not be able to be healed. But the fact that this angel was coming on a mission to heal Avram, that brought about that Lot would also be able to be healed. So now, when Avram, we want to see here, in the chesed of Avram, going back to this, the generosity of Avram, we spoke in a physical, pragmatic sense. But then we take a look in this part that I'm emphasizing about the petition to God for 50, 40, 30. Here you could also see the different chesed, the spiritual chesed of Avram is concerned for everybody spiritually. There are a lot of people that are concerned for everybody spiritually. I think they say over from Yisrael Salanter that you'll always walk by a shul and you'll see somebody calling out, Baruch Hu! And everybody should come in to say Kedusha and Baruch Hu. But he says when you walk by houses, you don't see people screaming, supper time, come in and eat. He says it seems to say that you're going to miss a Kedusha, come on in. That kind of a chesed, they could have a lot of candidates. But the chesed to stand by the door and call out the passerby, supper time, dinner time, to ring the bell, that we don't find that many. So before we want to establish Avraham Avinu to be an ish chesed, we start with giving the angels the bosa and the lechem and so on. Then we're going to ascend to the spiritual chesed. Spiritual chesed, although this is speaking about life, but it's speaking in spiritual terms. Now he starts petitioning Hashem in 23, and he says, will you also drag into the room the righteous with the wicked? Now, many are troubled by this. So Hashem answers him, and then what does he say in 25? He says, sacrilege would it be, chalil alcha, this would be sacrilegious to do something like that, lohamis tzadikim rasha, that the tzadik should be the same as the rasha. He says, how could you do that? That's not to judgment. Now, God said in 26, if I find in Sdom 50 people, I will keep the whole place by Avuram in their stead. Now, if you notice, so how will we learn? In its simple fashion, everybody takes or assumes that God was going to destroy, or the way Avram understood it, that God is going to destroy the good with the evil. And that's a question, how will God destroy the good with the evil? We know sometimes, like once was asked to me, when the wrath of God comes out, Einam Mafchin, it doesn't differentiate between good and evil. But here, really, it wasn't the instant. That's when we find when an act is done, and like an immediately reaction to that, is it brings out the wrath of God, Einam Mafchin Bein Tzadik L'Rasha. It doesn't discriminate. It says a few times later in the Torah, Vayivar Bo Meish Hashem. Like as a result, the fire of God went ahead. But here you don't have that type of enough of a reaction, right? Here you have the idea of a meditated, and a lot of meditation going in, right? And it's a lot of planning, and it's a deliberate type of a judgment. Now, in a deliberate type of a midas hadin, how will you go ahead and destroy the tzaddik with the rasha? So the question Hirsch is troubled with is indeed, was this really the intent of Hashem to do so? So Hirsch says that really, that wasn't what God told Avram. He told Avram that there are two alternatives for Sodom. In verse 21 it says, I will go down and see if the tzakoso habo alai, if like the screaming that came to me, they did that. What was the screaming? So Rashi brings down that there was one person, one young girl, who tried to act kindly, right, with Orchim, the Medrash says, and they went ahead and they really, they punished and afflicted and tortured her. There's a Medrash, the Chazal tell us, another Medrash that said that this young girl was Lot's daughter, one of Lot's daughters. It's just an aside because it's not mentioned in that original intent. So now it says, if it is true what this girl did, kolo. Kolo means complete destruction. Or, if not, edo, I will have punishment for the guilty, but allowing the whole to continue. So now that Hashem knew that the idea was, I mean, Avram didn't really think that the righteous would really go ahead and be destroyed. But what Avram wanted to say, not that he had the slightest doubt that even if the degree of degeneracy did demand the destruction of the whole district, any innocent person would be destroyed. Obviously they would be saved, and no innocent person would be punished together with the guilty. Even the thought of such a thing, he says in verse 25, Chalila lecha, he's like saying to God, that surely you would never do. I don't even think that you mean that when you say, and God didn't mean that. But he says, Chalila lecha, you're not going to go, that there's nothing to talk about, because our God would never do that. What we are, unless, like we said before, which I gave you a hakdama, I gave you the prelude, that There are certain times when the mita sadin, the wrath is uncovered. But everything else is done with the cheshbon. So you couldn't do that. So what Hashem meant was that if the whole environment is worthy of destruction, it'll all be destroyed. And if not, I will save the righteous people and destroy the rest of the city. But Avram says you shouldn't destroy the rest of the city. Look what he says. Leman chamishim atzadikim. He says in sentence 24, if there are chamishim tzadikim b'teichoyir in the midst of the city, will you destroy and you won't carry over forth the city because on the schus of the 50 righteous people? Now Hirsch goes on his own way here. And he says, because if you have 50 righteous people, he says, b'teichoyir, in the midst of the city, not tzadikim sitting by themselves, but tzaddikim in the midst of the city trying to... So these tzaddikim who have tried to have an influence to be mekarev, what's going to happen to them? Their whole spirits will be destroyed and so on, the way he says it. And this, I'll just read you this. He says, they're in living connection with everything and everybody. They're b'teichoyir. So he said, are you going to destroy them? These people themselves will feel deflated and will feel debilitated because they couldn't accomplish anything. So in a sense, they're going to be punished also. So Hashem said, Bavuram, because these righteous ones exist and are tolerated in the whole city deserves forgiveness. So I won't go ahead and punish them. The thing that troubles me a little bit with Hirsch's interpretation is Hirsch says, if there are 50 people there, he says, even, let me go further, he says, now he ventures to express the thought, whether perhaps the pain which the righteous would have to endure at seeing the terrible destruction of their fellow citizens all around them might not be worthy of consideration, and perhaps they shouldn't suffer this pain Lemana tzadikim, for the sake of the righteous, to spare them this mental anguish, God could not grant remission to the whole community. This is the way Hirsch learns. I consider this to be a weak svar, in order that they'll be saved, right? Lemana tzadikim. Lemana tzadikim, that they shouldn't suffer anguish because they tried so long and that's true. The emotion is there. The sentiment is there. Because when you have someone who you worked with spiritually, you have a certain closeness, even if that person has gone away from your path. I mean, like in the Jewish literary world, those that know Jewish literature, there was a famous writer, and I don't think, Chaim Grade. You heard of Chaim Grade? Now, Chaim Grade wrote Semach Atlas, the Yeshiva Welt, all of these stories. He was a famous writer in Yiddish. Chaim Grade was a student of the Chazon Ish in his youth. But he became a maskil and he went away totally. In fact, his Yiddish, he has about 1,000-page book, the Yeshiva. It's modeled, or he uses as his main character like the Chazon Ish. People say that even in the older age, when he was already a maskil, there was a certain love. He had a tremendous love. In fact, just read recently when he was in a dialogue in New York with someone, Berkowitz. So he said that the two main figures in his life were his mother and the Chazon Ish. So he had this connection. They say also that the Chazon Ish had this weakness for him too, because he had him like as a young student. So a lot of times when you have a hashpoah, you teach someone, even if that person goes away, I know myself, even if the person sometimes is not what you hoped or what you expected, there is still this very warm kinship and warm spot in him. So you do suffer whenever you see the destruction of that person. So Hirsch's psychological view of this would be correct, but I think the way we have been speaking, there could be another point here which would fit in very well. If the covenant, like we said before, of Noah was given to Avram, and the logic of the covenant would be, because mankind will never be destroyed, because there will always be teachers amongst the people, so you could never give up if there are teachers amongst the people, so he's petitioning God in the same vein in a very simple matter. If there are 50 teachers amongst the people, there are 50 people, so they will have an influence. That's what originally your change in the world took place after Noah. So this would fit in very well. So God says, no, if betecho here, if they're tolerated in the city, we could continue with Hirsch's interpretation. If it's betecho here, if they're tolerated in the city, so then I will take that in mind. So this falls very well with what I said earlier. God said, Hamechasa anim Avram, will I cover from Avram that which I'm going to do to Sdom? Because in a sense, this is Avram's domain. He is the one as the care of the priests. And Avram's petition to God fits in very well with that same concept. If there are 50 people, so they're going to have an influence, so why will you destroy them? And God really agreed that as long as there would be 10, it seems that less than 10 in Sodom would be very difficult. You say, why less than 10 in Sodom? Because really you could wonder in general. I mean, we have two different concepts, really, even in this Sedra that are coming about. You have this idea of what we call outreach, the Tochoyir. You also have the idea of Yishmael, a little bit later, Yishmael and Yitzchak, right? That after Yitzchak was born, Sora said to Avram, Garesh Eso Oma, drive out this Oma from my house. She shouldn't inherit together with my son, with Yitzchak. So what is this Garesh philosophy? What is the idea of Garesh? The answer is because there is a great danger, because a person can, supposedly Yitzchak can influence him, but he could be influenced many more times to a much greater level than actually than Yitzchak could be influenced. They tell over like a mushel. So the Chofetz Chaim again used to give a very interesting moshul with this. He said, well, the Chofetz Chaim explained it. There was a maise, to appreciate this, he says the maise is with Reb Yehuda HaBalan Meradin. Reb Yehuda the Balan, meaning he was the person who took care of the bathhouse in Radin. So the Chofetz Chaim, one time before he came into the mikveh, he asked the Balan, he asked the attendant, did he heat up the water of the mikveh? So the attendant said, of course. He says, just before, a short time ago, he said, I threw into the cold water, I threw in more than a half of a boiler, he said, of hot water, so you can rest assured that it's good and hot. So the Chafetz Chaim went into the mikveh, and the water was very cold. So he went to the boiler, and he put his hand into it, and he saw that the boiler was lukewarm. The dough was poshrit. So then he said to the Balan, he says, you should know, he says, if the water is boiling, steaming hot to begin with, and you pour it into cold water, then it'll become lukewarm. If it's lukewarm and you pour it into cold water, then it's going to become cold. So it has to have some effect upon this person as an individual. So Chafetz Chaim always used to say that those people should think twice, that they think that they could have influence amongst others. They have to also realize that the others can influence him. Now, the Rav Yisrael Salanter, who nobody could handle Chafetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Salanter, nobody would accuse him of being not concerned, we'll say, about the spiritual welfare of everybody else. Rav Yisrael Salanter. But they want to make us aware of the dangers, you know. And because just like the tzaddik could learn from the rasha, just the same as the rasha could learn from the tzaddik. They say that, and we have four species, four minim ansukis. You have the esrik, which is person who is learned and pious and so on. Then you have the Aravis, Nadasim, and the Lulav. One stands for a person who has good deeds without learning. And even the Aravis, without learning, without good deeds. So now we put them all together, we say, and you become a Aguda Achas, right? But the Aguda Achas, I think it was the Chofetz Chaim pointed out, but it's only when you're making the bracha do all four to go together. After you finish making the bracha, the Esrig is put aside. The Esrig is separated. The idea is the Esrig has to be together with the others and to influence them in the service of God. But once you live amongst them, if you're totally there all the time, so then we're afraid of the concern that they would have in you. So there's a lot to discuss of that. So you see that kind of a theme. Yet you see here, Chamishim Tzadikim B'Techo Yir. So we could say that Betecha here means that what? That for religious purposes they're living, but the people are good aware. So maybe that's perhaps the idea of Asora Tzadikim, I'm just thinking. If you have 10, perhaps, you could say that the 10 together will be able to exert an influence. If there is less than 10, if there's only one or two or three, there's a question if indeed they would be able to have the proper influence on a city as strong as Sodom. What this means, and you have to say that, because what is this communication, or what is this dialogue that's going on between God and Avram? Obviously they're dealing 50, 40, 30, 20. So it was a determination perhaps in, if we'll say, in kirov, an outreach, in the degree that a person can have hashpah on a community and how to expose himself, how many people do you need? It seems that there is this concern and this consideration. But this, of course, we see, you could, as I said, you could bring passages and stories from both sides, and you have to be able to weigh them and to find the happy median really in between. We see what Sodom was. Lot was not perhaps a tzaddik to be saved on his own accord, right? Yet, what was the reaction of how evil were the Sodomites? Let's emphasize this one point. Verse says, the fact that this city leaves these righteous people, if there are still in a state like Sodom 50 righteous men who live a life and stand up for it, and also consideration of the idea is the fact that their existence, he says at the end, are tolerated, that would itself be a proof that the degeneration had not yet reached the lowest depth. And we see how true this is, because shortly thereafter, when they accused Lot of going ahead, we know the story was that Lot harbored them overnight, so they were ready to destroy Lot. So you see that even one sign of one short sign, or one moment, we'll say, of showing chesed was against the judgment, the justice of, now by Sodom, Sodom had mishpat also. Sodom had judgment. Sodom, in fact, probably I would venture to say that nobody ever stole anything in Sodom. There's absolute justice in Sodom. Like I once mentioned in Saudi Arabia at that time, right? Nobody ever steals. Once in a gable, somebody steals and he gets his hand publicly taken off, amputated. So yad for yad, they go, according to them, literally. So there's very little crime till Iraq comes in. But in a civil sense, there is very little crime there. Why? So you'll say that's justice. We know a hand for a hand, an eye for an eye, that's not justice. But they would say, you see justice. Sodom had justice. You could eat from the streets, nobody dropped a piece of paper there. And there was no crime. So is this justice really a true justice? So in this, Hashem tells, he could relate back to this pasuk where God says, Tzedakah, how does he speak about that? I'm chasa anim Avram, and I know that he will tell his sons. Look at verse 19 for a moment. Because I know that he will tell his sons that they will guard the path of God. Ba'asos tzedakah u'mishpat. What is this dual term that's used? Benevolence and justice. Tzedakah u'mishpat. What is tzedakah u'mishpat? So he says, we know mishpat is justice, but justice could be sheli sheli v'shaloch shaloch. What I have is mine, what you have is yours. But tzedakah is something else. It's like we find in the Talmud a term, zeh neneh v'zeh leichosa, in a case when I could have pleasure from something, and you don't lose anything by my having pleasure, nothing at all. So we force you to let me have the pleasure, if I don't cause any loss to you. And the term used in the Talmud is kofin al midas Sodom, meaning we force you not to act as a Sodomite would act. Because by Sodom, their whole concern was that you can't have anything of mine, no matter what it is. But it was oizgah, I mean, in a sense, it was justice. So, like to quote Hirsch again, he says, tzedakah is placed first. He says, why? Because not mishpat, but tzedakah is the world redeemer.